This show is supported by State Farm. You have insurance for your home, your health, and your car. Why don't you have insurance for your small business? So many small business owners think they don't need or don't even know about small business insurance. Protecting a source of revenue is one thing, but so is protecting all of your hard work and your team members. State Farm agents are all small business owners too, so they know how to help small business owners choose personalized policies that fit their budgets. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
I think, yeah, putting yourself out there is the great way, because if you don't do anything, you're not going to learn anything. I think the advice is to...
Welcome to Game Dev Advice, the Game Developers Podcast, your place for resources and in-depth conversations with other game development professionals. I'm your host, John J.P. Podlasic. I've worked at 10 different game companies, starting back in 1989 with the TurboGrafx-16. Over the decades, I've developed games like Mortal Kombat, Avengers Initiative, Beavis and Butthead, and numerous others. I now work for a startup called Level X. But this podcast isn't about me. It's about you and the game development community. So if you have questions or ideas, give a call, 224-484-7733, or go to the GameDevAdvice.com website. So let's kick things off with the new Game Dev Advice.
Hey everyone, thanks for your patience waiting for the new episode. It's the 50th, which is an exciting milestone. Appreciate you listening. The show's now in over 70 countries. Our guest for this one is Carl LeDuc from New Zealand, second guest from that wonderful country. He's a games producer at Altered State Machine, the vice chair of the NZGDA, along with the creator of the popular Zero to Play podcast that interviews game developers each week. Enjoy. Hey, Carl. So where are you calling in from tonight?
Hey, John. Thanks for having me. I'm calling in from Auckland, New Zealand, Southern Hemisphere.
And again, which town is that? Which part?
Auckland. It's the one, a city in New Zealand.
Okay. No, that's fantastic. It's a beautiful part of the world. So what's your current role right now?
Probably about a month and a half or maybe 2 months, I've been a games producer at Altered State Machine, which is a Web3 blockchain company, great. Great topic that we can touch on today.
And it just started, so that's, you said a couple of months ago, so that's great.
Yeah, just came off shipping a survival game for a company called Rocketworks, where I was a production coordinator for 2 years, shipped that at the end of last year, and then, yeah, got this opportunity early this year, which was awesome.
Oh, congrats. So how did you get started in the game industry?
Initially, I wanted to pursue film and got a diploma in screenwriting and directing, but I couldn't find a stable job. And that led to me kind of looking into other industries, other creative industries. And after being a lifelong gamer, I found a mobile game studio, and that kind of piqued my interest. And after, I think, just lucky timing and maybe a bit of charm, I managed to get a QA internship there.
Foot in the door, right? So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, the foot in the door is no joke. It's really important, because as soon as I got into the system, my whole worldview changed on, you know, what games was, what I could do there. So yeah, QA was my first job there, which I'm really appreciative for.
That's how I TurboGrafx-16 hotline phone, then I was in QA, and you get to see how the sausage is made, right? Like you're in the trenches, and you're working with, especially if you're in-house QA, you're working with engineers and designers and artists, and it gives you a real interesting perspective into the industry.
Yeah, you can. What I love is there's obviously pressure to, you know, test and make sure that you are, you know, logging bugs for the latest builds so that things don't get missed, but at the same time, you kind of have time to observe and learn about each department and meet new people. That's what I really loved. That's, I think, why QA is such a good role to kind of get in, because the people's eyes just aren't on you expecting the world from you. You can kind of just ease into it, which was really nice.
Yeah, and you can kind of see where you aspire towards, right? Like, I'm really good about organization and tracking things, and I want to start then going into production or
I love design, and I'm going to get more technical working in Engine because I want to aspire to be a level designer. And so you kind of focus on that, right? It's kind of like that on-ramp to the game industry, and then you can kind of figure out where you want to go, especially with design, production, and art to some degree. It seems more design and production centric for QA. But
yeah, that's what actually happened to me is after a year of working in QA, one of the producers that was on the project I was helping QA for left, and I just, you know, mm-hmm. with my naive self, I was like, I can be that producer that kind of steps in and replaces. And I ended up putting my interest in for that role. And it came out with me getting a job as an assistant producer. So it was, you know, with me feeling overconfident, but being able to put myself out there made me show my interest in kind of switching departments. And I've loved the production department ever since. And that's been my career path.
Yeah, I remember back when I was in QA and there was some production floundering happening on a game that we were publishing at Viacom New Media. So I was kind of stepping into kind of a assistant associate producer type role to help ship this PC game. And yeah, it's kind of like trial by fire, or just kind of you get promoted during battle type thing, and you get kind of put into that position. So thinking back to when you started, kind of like, what do you wish you had known?
I think I don't know if my path would have been any different, but in the last few years, I've really found a big passion in engaging with the community. I'm part of the board of the New Zealand Game Developers Association, and that role gives me immense joy and satisfaction, and gives me a chance to learn from indie developers and studio managers in the industry, and help out the industry as a whole. I don't know if I would have. Those associations existed when I started in the industry in 2014, but I don't think I was mature enough or confident enough in my path to consider joining something like that. But I wish I was maybe more active in the community and maybe went to more meetups, put myself out there more, participated in more game jams. I think that just would have helped my journey progress faster. And I do love the games industry. And once you kind of work in a corporate environment, I feel like it's easy to get lazy or get complacent, and you stop kind of pursuing what interested you about the industry in the first place, because you've just got a paycheck coming in every month, and that's something I'm actively trying to push against is really leaning into the community and helping support those that are starting out in a way that would have helped me when I started.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about that community.
Yeah, so the NZGDA helped run an annual conference called NZGDC, New Zealand Game Developers Conference. And also we have an early stage fund called Kiwi Game Starter, which is a competition where people can get, you know, like $10,000 to $20,000 for their project to continue development. So it's quite small, but that is quite a big deal for those starting out. And it's... Yeah, it's really interesting just understanding the different types of companies and people within an industry. So you have the AAA or AA studios that have 10 to 100 employees or 100 to 200 employees, and then you have the indie side, which is just 2 to 10 people, and them trying to make it and having some successful titles and keeping their business nice and small. And it's been really interesting trying to think of what is valuable to both of those people, and what they need from the industry and from government and from investment and things like that. I'm learning every day about it. It's really interesting.
So you got back in 2014. Like, what's your advice, for someone trying to get their first job?
I think department's really important. I think if I had spoken to producers back when I started, I probably would have realized that I was kind of a producer type earlier, and probably would have attacked more entry level production positions earlier. But if you enjoy programming, or if you're an artist and you're just kind of starting out or graduating from uni, I'd definitely recommend participating in game jams and connecting with the community, getting some projects under your belt, and just experimenting with different game systems, different teams, different platforms, and things like that, just to rapidly get experience, I think game jams are a great way of doing that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, otherwise looking for entry level positions or looking for internship opportunities. Because that's what I think the like local associations are trying to do is make that onboarding really helpful. And if you look to those associations, you might find opportunities that, you know, it's they're obviously trying to get your attention. But if you take a few steps towards them, you might find a lot of interesting opportunities that you might not have found just by kind of going about your day to day. So maybe having a bit of initiative is something that would be helpful just to see what's happening, see what industry events are happening, and that might be the way to make that connection that gets you first job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you know, engaging in community and being part of game mm-hmm. jams, stuff like that. Yeah, those things are all important. What about somebody that wants to try and advance their career as a producer right now? Like, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm asking myself that question, and I actually want to participate in a few game jams to see if I can be of value as a producer, because part of me has this feeling that, you know, I'm not actually contributing to the game in a valuable way. I, you know, me going in as QA might be more helpful than as a producer with such a small team. People can kind of manage themselves. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a lot of value to applying the things that like these organizational and process pieces of advice that work for you and like your personal life and trying to give that advice to other indie devs. An example is I feel I'm trying to do that with my Twitter content these days is, you know, I'm trying to kind of repurpose it or trying to put it in a way that is valuable to those that don't necessarily have producers on their team or have that production mindset. I saw just the other day there was a free course on Udemy for, you know, like production fundamentals. I think those things are always nice. I think there's reading books is great, like Blood, Sweat, and Pixels, and just hearing stories about how different teams managed their projects. I think those are really great stories to read because you can use those stories to help when you're facing struggles in your projects. Mm-hmm. Jira and Confluence, they have, you know, community boards that where they host you know, webinars and talk about their latest features and things like that. And I think that is there's always value there. Same as at conferences, looking at what talks are happening in the production stream and either connecting with the speaker or just listening to what their talk is that might present an interesting strategy or process that you weren't aware of.
And on the topic of books, Clinton Keith is just awesome on the production side for game development. I participated about a decade, 12 years ago when I was at Disney about doing agile development and stuff for games. So he's a consultant and he's done a couple of things. So Clinton Keith is a name to check out. And then going back to an earlier episode, breakingthewheel.com and my friend Justin Fisher, who's got a lot of really interesting ideas around production and doing game development smart without crunch and trying to figure out ways to be just more smart about development and not just 100-hour weeks and all that kind of stuff. So those are some resources I'd like to share to people. So what do you feel is the most important quality or skill for other kind of game developers in general to have? It's a broad stroke, right? Like game developers can be artists, designers, producers, engineers.
Yeah, I think just the nature of game development being so cross-functional and a combination of so many different mediums like sound, arts, programming, design, they all kind of possess different skills and different types of people that work in them. I think the best skill is probably communication and just learning to communicate efficiently with different people, whether that's, you know, making sure you put things in writing or be clear with, you know, what your intentions are in meetings and things like that. Mm-hmm. Even just learning how different people from different departments communicate, or it's even on a more personal level, how different people within your team communicate best. And if someone, usually programmers don't like to be bugged every 20 minutes and with your remote or in person, like having them always constantly get interrupted is probably not very efficient. And just kind of learning these little communication insights into different people. And, you know, when you sense someone's kind of frustrated, try and learn what way people prefer to communicate. Same as like your team in general, if maybe your team prefers to do stand-ups in the afternoons rather than in the mornings. Mm-hmm. And that can really shift the overall environment of like the positivity in the space, which mm-hmm. can help people be more productive and happier. So yeah, communication I think is really important.
Yeah, that's definitely key. And no, it's a good point too about engineers, like as a producer, non-engineer, right? Like you don't realize sometimes how challenging it is to get in that headspace when you're writing code, right? And it's not like you're jumping between, you know, Jira and a Word doc, right? Like it's a real deep dive to be an engineer. So like when they're kind of in that zone, they're doing stuff and they're getting bombarded all the time with, you know, messages, they can't concentrate, they can't focus. So you have to give them that time without interruptions so they can actually focus on the engineering work. And I used to hear that a lot, you know, with engineers. Mm-hmm. And kind of riffing off that, like, what is your environment? Is it in person? Is it hybrid? Is it 100% remote? Like,
well, so I came from a team of 80 developers, mm-hmm. you know, working on one title to now I'm kind of in an R&D phase slash pre-production of several projects at this new company. Mm-hmm. And it's more of a software company first that's building out a games team. The environment is mm-hmm. slightly different than what like a traditional game studio looks like for now, but it's awesome to be a part of kind of a studio building in its early stages like this to foresee how it can grow in the next couple of years. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the environment right now, I am mostly remote, but we do have an office that we head to like once a week for, you know, workshop. There's a lot of workshopping and whiteboard sessions happening mm-hmm. at this stage, just because there's a lot of design questions and just overall industry trend developments that we need to constantly discuss. We're not really in that kind of head down and work for the next 12 months just yet. A lot of planning. But yeah, if I can speak on my previous experience, which was a live service game that launched in December, and that was fully remote, and we'd been remote since August. We actually shipped the game while being fully remote, and that was quite an interesting experience to really accept that. Being a producer remotely, I thought it was always going to be temporary, but then I kind of had to lean into how I can do my job the best while being remote, which was an interesting realization.
Yeah, I've shipped lots and lots of games, and I've never shipped anything remote, right? Because like that wasn't mm-hmm. just a thing. So I think about those challenges, right? Because it used to be you'd be there and you'd be able to talk to QA and spend time in there and, you know, have mm-hmm. have meetings and whiteboard stuff. And this is like a whole new kind of paradigm, right? Or paradigm in terms of being remote, you know?
I had to learn to, and the biggest kind of shift that I made that I think really helped me do my job is not being afraid to just DM people mm-hmm. out of the blue and just fire off messages every, you know, couple minutes to different people. And people will manage their own asynchronous. If they're in like a state of flow, they can minimize or close or add, you know, put do not disturb on their Slack so they can focus on their work. But right. I think it's important for a producer to kind of in those moments to react and take action. Just like you would in a studio, you'd kind of get off your seat and then maybe see that they've got their headphones on and then choose to bother them later.
Right,
or you'd
right.
just kind of go off and get that answer from them then and there so that you can kind of progress, because producers are constantly solving, you know, 6-stage problems where they need to kind of go to multiple different departments and mm-hmm. maybe put together a meeting and things. And if you don't kind of lean into that state of flow of problem solving, then it'll be very hard for you to solve enough problems that a producer needs to solve on a daily basis to get a project done.
Yeah. You kind of touched on communication earlier, but like, you know, what's your advice about developing interpersonal skills, you know, kind of like the EQ, the soft skills, stuff like that?
I think just exposing yourself to as many different types of people is really valuable. Being patient with people. These are skills that I think a lot of people just kind of inherently have. People are more patient than others. But I think there are ways of kind of working on those things. And I think just putting yourself out there, whether it's meeting people, and this doesn't have to be within your job, but just meeting people in general so that you're kind of exposed to different personality types and different ways that people interact, and just being open-minded, being mm-hmm. supportive is really helpful, because as soon as you kind of meet someone new,
yeah,
you might know how to deal with them in a certain way based on others that you've interacted with. But I think, yeah, putting yourself out there is the great way, because if you don't do anything, you're not going to learn anything. I think the advice is to do something. And if it's communication that you want to improve, then communicate with more people.
Hey, hope you're enjoying the show. If you are, please go to patreon.com/gamedevadvice. We'd love to see if you can support the show and help new episodes keep coming out. That's patreon.com/gamedevadvice. Thanks.
This show is supported by State Farm. Insurance is a part of any solid financial plan. Making sure you have the important things in life covered is one of the best ways to give yourself a little breathing room when things go awry. It's important to protect not only your business, but yourself as a business owner and all current and future team members. State Farm agents know what it takes to run and protect a small business, because State Farm agents are all small business owners and they live and work in your community. So they're deeply attuned to what's happening with other small businesses in your market. If you have a small business and are interested in making sure you're protected, reach out to your local State Farm agent to learn more about what you need. They'll help you find the right policy at the right price for your business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
What's been your favorite game or project to work on?
I've only worked on, you know, less than half a dozen projects in my time, in my career. Yeah. But the project that comes to mind is just being really interesting is when I worked down at Weta Workshop on an augmented reality project called Dr. Grodbots. It was in partnership with Magic Leap, and it was an awesome experience, just because it was on emerging technology, where these like portals would appear on your walls and these robots would come out and kind of trip over your couch as they try and shoot you and you hit them back. And it was just, for me as someone who loves games and loves different experiences, that was just a couple moments where I was just kind of lost in the state of flow in that game, and just realizing kind of what was happening right in front of me. And it made me really, this was a couple of years ago now, and I feel like, yeah, augmented reality and even virtual reality haven't really hit their peak yet, but I'm really excited for the kind of projects that we'll be seeing once those platforms become a bit more mainstream.
Yeah. Hey, and that kind of bleeds into the next question, kind of like, you know, what are you curious about right now in the industry?
Well, I think my actions speak louder than words. I stepped into the Web3 blockchain space a couple months ago, and it was a very I spoke to a lot of people in the space, a lot of my mentors, a lot of people that I knew had concerns about the space, and I did a lot of research, and I think at the end of the day I'm curious about the technology, and there were enough talented people that I really respect that had moved into the space that made me realize that there was an opportunity right now to kind of get in early and to learn about the space and bring my passion for games and passion for game development to a business that, you know, needed those skills. So I think, yeah, the Web3 space I find really interesting. There's obviously a lot of noise in the space, but I think
it's hard to, you know, curious. Yeah, for me, it's like it's hard. Because I'm intrigued by it, but it's like, how do you separate the noise from, you know, the garbage from what's the gems, right? Like, I'm trying to get my head around that space. So yeah, I'm curious about your perspective about like what is cool and valuable in Web3, right?
I think also on one end, I'm a gamer first. I'm not really crypto native person per se. Like I've got a wallet and I've invested in some NFTs just to kind of test the waters, but it's not a huge portion of my income's kind of going into the space. And when the crypto economy shifts, it doesn't really affect me that much.
Right.
But I think, and it also gets very technical very fast. And there's a lot of, you know, really smart people working in the space on things that I honestly don't understand or couldn't help communicate. I'm just kind of focusing on the areas that I understand and working on the projects that I kind of believe in and with teams that I believe in. I think it just presents a new way of engaging with interactive media.
Okay.
I think similar to when free-to-play kind of emerged, people weren't quite sure how it was going to affect the industry or quite sure how much of a chunk it was going to cater for. And that kind of emerged around mobile as well as a platform. Mm-hmm. And I think something similar is happening. And there's a lot of things that are just happening in the world. One with COVID and people becoming more remote, mm-hmm. I think has put a lot of pressure into the space. I think virtual reality kind of reaching its next iteration and companies like Facebook stepping in and Apple, it's putting a lot of attention in the space. And the word metaverse has created this big buzzword that so many people are trying to approach, and Web3 being this other financial layer to what the future of the metaverse might be. It gets very, very complex and very wishy-washy very quick. But I think we're just early, and I think it's just going to take time. And I don't think, I think it's just going to take time for the kind of noise to kind of settle and for people to realize what use cases work in the space and what use cases don't. And I think there's going to be a lot of failure, and there's going to be a couple of people that succeed and become really prominent in the space. Yeah. And I think it's getting a lot of attention right now, and it's a lot to deal with.
And we touched a little bit earlier, but like, what are your thoughts on AR and VR?
I think I'd say they're both two different paths, like two different types of technologies. Augmented reality being something that uses your physical world as kind of a base, whereas virtual reality is kind of an endless experience that's
enclosed.
360.
Right.
So I think both of those ask for kind of different use cases, but there's still a lot of experimentation happening in the space. Mm-hmm. I love technology. I love experimenting with new technology and trying out new experiences. And I think the AR and VR headsets are the next kind of iteration of technology. I don't know how common, you know, VR and AR headsets are going to be in every household like phones are nowadays.
Right.
But I do think they're going to be, I think they're going to be the next frontier of technology that does get iterated on. I think there's a lot of, you know, issues that need to be resolved around the technology still. And it's hard to cater for, you know, people with glasses and things like that. There's a lot of edge cases that mm-hmm. still need to be figured out. But I'm excited, and there's a lot of money, a lot of really talented companies that are working on this technology every day. I think what Snap is doing for the AR industry is awesome, and they're really leading, leading mm-hmm. the way in a lot of these kind of augmented reality experiences and augmented reality adjacent products that will help will help the industry move forward and just become this more fleshed out and environment that, you know, that we'll see some really big experiences come out in the future.
We've done some projects at my job at Level X on Magic Leap, and at the consumer level, it's a tough ask, right? Like it's a lot of monies to get into it versus like, you know, a $299, you know, with a Quest. But yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff on the Magic Leap, and it tends to be a little bit more on the enterprise business side, but it is pretty exciting. Like you can overlay, you know, these visuals on top of your environment and do things that are very different from VR. Right. Where does this stuff go? Like, where are we 2 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now? Excited to see what Apple does in the future in this space, because they're not always the first out of the gate, but they always kind of crush it later when they come out with whatever they're going to do. So what about potential threats that you see to the game industry? What kind of stuff do you go, that's kind of sketch? Like, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, I think the perfect example is, even though I'm working in Web3, seeing play to earn games, and just I think the word play to earn is a really damaging sentence that causes a lot of, and I just think that there's a lot of people developing, you know, game like experiences or experiences that they use the word game, where they're actually, you know, whether it's, you know, closer to gambling or closer to like a casino experience that doesn't necessarily take skill or isn't necessarily mm-hmm. entertaining or fun.
Yeah.
And even though I'm in the Web3 space, I know and I'm excited for the projects that will emerge that develop a game that is fun first, and then have maybe a layer that the players can earn if they want to go down that route within the game. And so I think the terminology play to earn is quite damaging, and mm-hmm. And a lot of the experiences that get attention within the games community, I think, make me shudder a little bit, because they're not really game experiences. But with the amount of game developers that I know that are working on projects now in the industry, I'm excited for what is going to come out in the next 12 months. You know, give the right talent time to make a valuable experience in the space, and think we'll be surprised by, you know, what these experiences might look like. That's what I'm, that's what kind of frustrates me a bit in the space. But at the same time, I'm just kind of head down, focused on doing the best that I can in the space. And hopefully it comes out and is an experience that people can enjoy. And then people, whether it's they're scamming, whether it's an experience that's more like gambling, I feel like those stories are going to become less and less as more talent and more legit experiences start emerging.
I was just hearing, you know, this is June 11th here, 2022, but it was this Axie Infinity was talking about, like, it sounds kind of like play to earn type stuff, and all this money just disappeared and stuff like that. So yeah, those kind of things are, you know, it sounds very utopian and you're playing, but it also sounds kind of very grindy, right? Like play to earn.
Yeah, yeah.
It feels very almost like sweatshop, like you're just sitting there clicking on stuff and there's no game there really.
Yeah, I think there was an interesting quote by some of the names escaping me, but it's your game. It's Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and if you can pay rent with an experience, that experience is going to become a job, and there's nothing you can change about that. It's in Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If something can provide the shelter and food that you need, which is at the top of the pyramid, that's more important than things that are, you know, fun and entertaining. And I think there is an interesting balance that needs to be struck with these with this kind of emerging genre of, you know, Web3 games, where the fun and the entertainment side needs to be the majority interest, and maybe there's only 5% of the people of the players that like a chance or are interested in kind of pursuing the earn side of the project. And the thing is, the space is so early that there's so many different ways you can do it. There's no rule book right now of how someone can earn. You know, it could be a tournament where the winner of the tournament gets X amount of money, and that situation, that scenario can work within the Web3 context. Even though, yeah, that can be done without blockchain technology, but it can create also some unique systems that can't exist in like a Web2 infrastructure.
So is there anything I should have asked you about but didn't?
I'm glad we touched on Web3 stuff, just because that's kind of my whole career path right now. And I do think it's interesting to talk about. You didn't ask me about my podcast, which I plug if anyone's listened.
Plug away. Yeah, sure.
All of the episodes of Game Dev Advice and is looking for more interviews from game developers. I do have a interview show called Zero to Play, which can be found on YouTube and Spotify and all the podcasting platforms, where there's just some interesting guests that I've interviewed, whether they're indie devs, developers that work at AAA studios, those that work in game adjacent companies, whether they're like marketing or localization firms, or even YouTuber game devs, which I think is a really fascinating kind of emerging space where content creators are building communities by building games through YouTube content. And that's a really interesting kind of mix of a lot of different skills, which I find interesting. Yeah.
Cool. And what was the name of the podcast and the YouTube channel again?
Zero to Play.
Zero to Play. Okay.
Zero to Play podcast. Yeah.
Cool. So what game or games are you playing right now that you're excited about?
Well, the game that I'm playing the most right now is Valorant. I'm a big fan of first-person shooters, and I think Riot Games, like, it's very hard for them to be dethroned, I think, because of all of the infrastructure that they've put in to make competitive games. And I think that's what I love about them is you know, they clearly know their target market, and they've built world-class tools to help, whether it's even the streaming side and the competitions that they run. It's incredible to see, and I love it when people that aren't necessarily interested in games, or friends that I have that aren't big into games, kind of mention something like a Riot Games tournament, whether it's League of Legends or Valorant, that comes across their view. And I love seeing projects like that showing how games are really spilling into pop culture and spilling into the mainstream of, you know, the general public.
And we talked about this a little bit earlier, but like, you know, where can people find you online? Like the website, Twitter, stuff like that. What are your...
Best contacted through Twitter at Carl's Content. I'm very active on Twitter. Try post there regularly. Try provide value to the community there. Also on LinkedIn at Carl LeDuc, if you want to connect with me there.
Okay.
But yeah, Twitter is definitely the best place. And my DMs are open if you want to reach out at any time.
Yeah. And just full disclosure, like I was on Twitter and you had a really valuable kind of thread talking about game production and indie game development and like thoughts on best practices and stuff like that. And I found that really interesting. And that's how we kind of connected.
Yep. That's my pinned tweet at the moment. If you're interested, it's called 8 Tips for an Indie Dev Making a Game from a Producer. And these are just ideas that I wrote down through my discussions of other people. I think thanks to the podcast as well, helped me feel like I was talking to the right audience. But yeah, I enjoy content on Twitter. It's easy and fun and valuable.
Yeah, I have to watch it because it's like you start going on Twitter and you're like, this is cool. Then you start going down rabbit holes and you're like, shit, where's that hour gone? I gotta be careful here. So yeah. Last question, like what's one piece of advice you give others working in the industry right now?
Yeah, just I think that the whole space right now, especially with being in Web3, I kind of react to what I see a lot more. But I think a piece of advice that I'd like to share is just for people to keep an open mind and not to jump to conclusions or think that, you know, I have zero interest in making a quick buck or kind of flipping. And like I have huge respect for my peers, just general people that play any experiences that I create. And the fact that I now work in Web3, there are a few people that have assumed that I have, you know, bad intentions and that I'm out there just to make money. And I think that couldn't be further from the truth. And I think my advice would be to just keep an open mind and be patient with new technology, because no one really knows how it's going to impact the future. And people just want to have fun, try new things, experiment and explore and try and see what can be done. People that are experimenting with new technology. So
yeah,
I think that would be my advice is, because there's a lot of negativity and a lot of anger in the space and a lot of threads. I think Twitter especially is a place that kind of brings those emotions out.
Yeah.
And I think just having patience and an open mind is, I think, good in this time.
It's tricky, right? Cause you know, you've got the Bored Ape Yacht Club stuff, and you're like, what is this? What? Right? But it's like separating that to see where there's value, where there's something that's interesting and not just, well, it's all garbage, you know, people hucking stuff, right? Like it's tricky, right? Cause it's like, how do you separate the wheat from the chaff and like, what is valuable and what is good? But there is a lot of interesting stuff out there, especially in the Web3 space, but sometimes it gets, you know, lumped in with all the Bored Ape stuff. And it's like, all right, no, that's not the case. What is the future here and what is cool, and keeping an open mind, right? Like, you know, that's important.
Hopefully in a year's time, if we chat again, we'll have a bit more, you know, there'll be maybe the Flappy Birds or the Candy Crushers from when mobile came out that have emerged in the Web3 space that can kind of start to make people wrap their head around. I mean, I don't think Flappy Bird is a really great example. That was more of like a viral hit, more like Angry Birds and Candy Crush,
right?
About how to use like a new platform or new technology. And I think, and hopefully in a year's time, we have a few experiences like that to talk about. Whereas I think things like Axie Infinity aren't a really good example right now.
No, especially the recent news and all that kind of stuff. It's like, whoa, there's some crazy shit going on. Well, cool. Thank you, Carl, for talking tonight. I really appreciate this discussion.
Yeah, it's so good. Thanks for having me, John.
Cool.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Game Dev Advice, the Game Developers Podcast. Go to the website at gamedevadvice.com and you can find the show notes along with show notes for all the other episodes. Please also check out the new Patreon page at patreon.com/gamedevadvice. Have a lot of options up there for how you can support the show. Again, that's patreon.com/gamedevadvice. Thanks again for listening and being part of the show. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks to State Farm for supporting this show and helping our listeners protect their businesses and lives. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.